Hello, I'm Roderick Chambers and you're on The Wire, independent coverage of current affairs on your local community radio station around Australia. As it's a public holiday today, we don't have our regular production of The Wire for you, but do stay with us to listen to a panel discussion on women in business, taken from the On the Money program a couple of weeks back. Business editor Tanya Katsanis leads a discussion with a Sydney City councillor, a former ABC journalist and a disability employment recruiter, all who have been in or are still in business and are well aware of the problems women experience and how they can overcome them. All this and more coming up.
I love the fact that we get the opportunity to celebrate women via International Women's Day, and I have the privilege to be joined by three very accomplished and inspiring women who are on three very different journeys. Anja Vithulkas is a force to be reckoned with. Not only is she an award-winning entrepreneur, public speaker, Angela is also a City of Sydney councillor, small business advocate, and now founder and leader of the Small Business Matters political party. Kerry Flower from Nova Employment has endured personal heartache and health issues to come out the other end stronger and braver than ever, showing us that never giving up gets you where you want to go. And finally, we have Sally Block, ex-ABC senior journalist. Having told over 10,000 stories during her professional career as a journalist, Sally has turned her focus onto becoming a media trainer and owner of Southerly Buster Productions. Welcome, ladies.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for being such awesome women. Now, Angela, can I start with you? Basically, you had a vision. I mean, you're very passionate about small business and you decided that our politicians weren't doing enough. So you needed to collect 750 signatures to start your own political party.
They needed, yes, the New South Wales Electoral Commission requires 750 confirmed members. So you start with that number. It's a minimum that you require. We ended up getting 1,300 in our first call out, but it's been a long journey to set up the party. And government in general writes off small business until election time. Then they trot us out.
And I want to go to Sally. You once quoted that your sub-editor at the ABC said, "Trying to single out a great reporter here is like trying to back a winner in the Melbourne Cup. They're all good." But do you feel that your time at the ABC, that you were given an equal opportunity to really progress and thrive with your career?
Absolutely. I think the ABC is definitely, certainly within the newsroom, was definitely a level playing field by the time I arrived. So the time I arrived was around 2000. So, and there was I started in radio news, and there's a very strong female presence. And that old days, there were sort of the grumpy sexist kind of guys that might have been there, but it was a minority, and the women were really strong, really, really strong presences there, and they were very, very inspiring. And so, and also the nature of news is that you had to cut it. You know, you couldn't just go there and bluff your way into being a journalist. So when I started, it was very difficult. And I mean, I started off as a news assistant, and the person who started before me had a PhD, and there was these tiny little positions you could get to get into the world of news. But it was very female, most of my colleagues were females, actually.
I want to come back to that, because quite often you hear in the workplace that women are their own worst enemies, and I want to have a general discussion on that. But Kerry, you're working currently with Nova Employment, and
yes,
they help find work for people with disabilities. But you've had this whirlwind career that's gone global and everywhere. How easy was it for you to sort of switch careers? Because you've been a hairdresser, events coordinator, you've done pharmacy assistants, you've done primary school teaching.
I just think I've been very lucky and blessed, I suppose, to be born with the gift that I can just be thrown into any situation and just come out the other side. But it's not just luck. It's a lot of perseverance, hard work. And I tell everyone, you don't get anywhere without hard work, and the drive and stamina to keep going. So I personally, although it's been tough, I've always found the light at the end of the tunnel, and I've always strived for the light at the end of the tunnel. So it doesn't matter what I'm doing, I'll set my mind to something and I'll just go for it, because at the end of the day, if that's what you want, you're going to do anything to get it.
And I mean, the three of you have all sort of had a bit of a shift in what you originally started doing in life. How easy was it for you to switch, Angela, like career? Well, you still run the cafe, but how easy was it you to go from being a cafe owner to a small business advocate and a councillor for the council?
So I would tell you that I had no idea what was happening as it was happening. It just felt the next thing to do the next day. So I've always been incredibly busy. I've always been running four or five different businesses at once. Just adding to the workload seems and feels quite natural. So I never assume I'm going to lose something to gain something. I seem to add to the pile. You know the old saying, they say, give something to a busy person so it gets done. But it's, I think it completes me to have lots of different things happening. I get bored very easy. Long weekends scare me because I don't know what to do with 2 days. I look around and go, what do normal people do when they have a long weekend? So I like being busy. I like being happy busy. I don't like being busy managing disasters. That's not on my list of priorities. Unfortunately, in politics, it tends to jump right up there, though.
So does it mean women tend to overcommit? Because I know that I take on a lot, and I can tell, I think, Kerry, you do, Sally, you do.
No, I don't know if we overcommit or we are engineered to do a lot of things. And I'm not bagging men, but they just don't take on as much. Simply, that's just the way life has turned out for a lot of them. You know, they are considered the main breadwinner, and for whatever reason or way that is, they are away from home a lot. Women manage families and homes and jobs, and they manage extra families. They manage their parents, they manage their in-laws. They're used to juggling quite a lot of things. So I think women have always done more than one thing. It doesn't seem strange to us. It seems quite normal for us that the male gender often doesn't juggle many things. And it's not that I'm a big advocate of men. International Men's Day is November the 9th. I've had to remind them all of that today. They do get looked after. But it just feels quite normal for me. And my dad encouraged that. I mean, my father was one of my biggest fans and always said that I should do whatever it is that I want. I didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to be a politician. I still have trouble even saying that word after 5 years. But it feels right.
And Sally, how about you? You've gone from journalist to media trainer. How was that transition for you?
Really difficult, actually, because I dreamed of having my own sort of production company and doing things for companies. Like, I do stories for charities that are telling good stories, which you don't often get to do in news. And so I had this vision of pretty much of how easy it would be, because news is full on. It's just totally anxiety driven. And you're filing for News 24 at the ABC, for radio and online and for TV. It's just full on. And I thought, yeah, it's going to be easy. And then when I left the ABC, I've been there for nearly 14 years, I was totally institutionalised. I had no idea about business. I had no idea of the challenges women face, particularly for Generation X women who are the more humble types. Even simple things as asking your worth, ask what to charge, you know. There are standard rates in my industry for directors and producers and stuff like that. But I found that in the greater world that I was working in, that men tended to be way more entitled. They were much more comfortable about putting huge markups on things.
Adding a zero.
And I was, with my ABC mentality, was like, it's about the story and it's about a charity, so I'm going to undercharge. And I didn't realise that...
Doesn't help you pay the bills.
And it was really, it took me a long time. I'm still adjusting as well. I've got to refine my brand. I've got to refine what I'm doing. You know, it's a lot more difficult because it's an unregulated industry. And see, in the ABC, to be a journalist at the ABC, you have to have a certain set of traits. You have to be able to deliver your stories. Whereas I found I was competing against, and I don't mean to bash men here, but, you know, with men, particularly ex-advertising men who would come into a pitch and they would promise the world and then what they delivered was completely different. In corporate production, you can say whatever you want, but you don't necessarily have to say you're going to deliver. And I'd found that there'd be people who were charging $20,000 to do something that I would do for $4,000. And they're so different because it's unregulated. You can say whatever you want. Whereas in news, it was discipline and you had to be had to have these traits.
The interesting thing is everybody's nodding their head on this panel. So
yes.
Did you want to add to that?
No, I find it astounding, actually. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think it's a very terrible bore. But in all industries, I've found most women are definitely undervalued.
Well, you had your own security company.
Yeah.
Did you undervalue yourself whilst you ran it, do you feel?
No, because I was with a team of other people that I had as well. So all of of us, and there were males involved in that as well, we all gave ourselves what we thought we were worth. So I think I've been sort of sheltered from all of that, because any roles that I've sort of taken in life, I've always made sure that I've got what I deserve.
But security is more regulated.
It is a lot more regulated as well.
Hourly rates,
yeah,
et
yeah. There's definitely, and that you have to follow award wages, right, and things like that now with a lot of the things that we do. Obviously, in certain industries, now I'm starting to realise it's not like that. And I think more in my job as well, because I'm dealing with a lot of employers all the time now. The comments that are coming up are very, very much the same, as well as we please don't send us Y-Gen. That seems to be.
Why is that?
They're finding these days that the Y generation don't seem to want to work for some strange reason. There's very, very few and far between that you'll find a young person that actually wants to go to work these days, which is really, really sad. If they're not at work, they're probably socialising, or they've got a phone attached to their hip and they're too busy looking at their phone. So employers now are finding that a real issue. So we're older people.
Can we just come back to the value of yourself? Is it, do you think, because women, not so much their confidence within themselves, but they're worried about the perceived value that other people might think, so they're rather lower themselves, as opposed, they're confident, you're confident, I can see, Sally. So why is it that you think you underpriced yourself?
A, because I didn't know the industry well enough. B, because I'd never studied business. I wasn't a business person. I didn't understand that, you know, you charge more for your stories. Well, the ABC had an hourly rate, you worked your way up, all that stuff was very siloed. Whereas in business, it's like, and I think men have a natural, because of the way they're raised, and I am being specific to my own generation here, Generation X, is that men feel entitled to talk themselves up. So I'm always dead honest. Like, I'll say, this is what I can deliver. This is how much it's going to cost. But they'll say, we're going to deliver this, and it's going to have bells and whistles. And I could never talk myself up like that, because I'm just too honest.
Well, if I can not psychoanalyze, but you've always been outcome driven. So yeah. As a journalist, you knew what you had to get to that goal and deliver that story. And you've carried that through to your job. Just what you weren't exposed to was the markup that you needed to add after that, which is just the experience in business, and that's a hospitality thing. It cost me $5 to buy it. I'm going to end up needing to charge 15 because I know that I've got all these overheads in between. So that's just business experience, right? And we know that if we don't put enough of a markup, so when GST was introduced, a lot of us in the food industry didn't add GST and didn't realise, even if you'd been in business for 20 years like I had at the time, you didn't realise that when it came time to pay the GST, oh my, that's coming out of my pocket, so I should have added it on. So we all cop that. But then at the same time, what you've got is you're outcome driven. You're so concerned with delivering a good job and a good product that you forget that other people aren't as concerned with the outcome.
That's very true.
They're only concerned with, I need this much money to pay all my bills. This will do. Mm. This will do. And it's your attention to that detail and quality will win in the end. You've just got a little bit of a bumpy road, because your quality will show through and word of mouth will work for you, because even though your world isn't regulated, people know when they're getting a good job, and we complain a lot when we get a bad production job. We know the difference.
And
now,
you should. But again, it's branding is attached. You've got a reputation as a really good a journalist. So you add the price to that. And I think men do that very, very well.
They do that naturally.
Can you imagine if politicians had to pitch and get paid according to their job, not what they said about it? Oh, they'd make nothing.
They'd make nothing. That's some people would add, like, it's sort of, you know, there's a rule of thumb of maybe a 30% markup. But then I found that I worked for another company at one stage, and the markups were just, like, they were ridiculous. Yeah. I thought, but that isn't what it cost. We've got to make money. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, well, if you've got to replace equipment and if you need to pay any rent on anything, or once you start looking at your insurances, and obviously a lot of your business costs aren't evident for the first year. It's not till things are annual that you're paying everything again that you start to realise, this is, again, I've got to pay this, or it's not a one-off cost. And that's when you start to realise that 30% after everything might be a good net, but not a good gross, and it changes.
Yeah. Ladies, we'll just take a quick break. I'm Tanya Katsanis. You're listening to On The Money Women's Edition. Thanks to Beyonce for reminding us that girls run the world on this special edition of On The Money, celebrating International Women's Day. I'm Tanya Katsanis, and I'm joined live in the studio by three sensational women, Angela Thoukas, award-winning entrepreneur, public speaker, and small business advocate, as well as the leader of the Small Business Matters political party, Kerry Flower from Nova Employment, and also Sally Block, ex-ABC senior journalist and owner of Southerly Buster Productions. Now, just before the break, I wanted to come back to the issue of women being their own worst enemy. Now, social media is rife with women who use their sexuality to get jobs, positions, power. Do you think there's a negative impact when people do that?
When you need a job, or you've got to get a job, or you've got to make a living, or you've got to support a family, my father used to say that you'd want to be rich or good looking, because if you're ugly and you're poor, you're not going to get anywhere. And I often used to laugh at that, thinking, you know, come on, that can't be true. But in a very vain, shallow world that we live in, very vain, shallow world, it does appear that looks or sexuality, and to some degree all of us may be guilty of judging on a surface or however that may be, if you can use whatever tool you have in your repertoire. Maybe you're not incredibly bright. Maybe you didn't get much of an education. I never finished high school. If I'd been 6 foot something, a size one, looked great in a bikini, maybe I never would have been a small business owner. I don't know. But it is an advantage. And do I agree with it? See, I'm on the receiving end of 5'2", not so much in every other department that doesn't require a lot of work. I don't know. I envy people who have had it easy and don't have to work too hard. But I enjoy what I do, and I think it's just the world. You know, my brother had it easy his whole life, and he won't mind me saying that. We're business partners. And he's always been good-looking. He's always had women flocking after him. He's never had a negative relationship. Even when they break up, they still call him and like him and wish him well. It just, you know, cute people get it easier.
Kerry?
I agree. Growing up through school, I had a best friend, and she was gorgeous. So it was like the ugly duckling with the swan princess. And, boys would flock after her.
It's just easy, right?
Yeah, it's just so easy. And they seem to get, I don't know what it is. There's just certain people, and they can get what they want without even trying.
Yep.
And it's just sort of handed to them, whereas there's the rest of us.
So
have
I do
to try.
But I'm not sure
if
you
respect it.
Yeah, I respect it.
It might be just envy speaking.
But does that mean that we'll never actually reach gender equality because there is, let's say, that certain X factor that a female may have in the workplace where she can get ahead?
Why? Because men don't exploit their good looks on social media with their abs?
I'm sure they do.
I was gonna say.
And everything else?
I'm sure they do.
They definitely do.
And they should. They should. Why not?
Yes.
I think there's two sides to that coin, though, okay. Because I've lived... I'm
the journalist speaking, though. Yeah.
I was a firm, you know, the beauty myth, Naomi Wolf. I've been a feminist my whole life. And I think that respect, which is respect for who you are as a person, no matter how you look, is far more valuable than someone catcalling you. And, like, I grew up with a very conservative mother who said to me, her advice to me with men was like, well, if you put out, you'll have every man around the corner after you. You know, it's not that hard to get my man into bed. And I think that's true. And I think that for women, I think that they making their sexuality their main calling card, I think it's an insult to the person that's actually underneath it. And I don't think that... I find that women who don't get taken seriously for their minds suffer. And I think that I've had friends who, you know, have model looks and, well, I don't even think of them like that. I just think of them as a friend, but they want to be taken seriously. And so I think that even though that there's this big, I mean, the Kardashian of all that kind of sex, I'm naked, I'm powerful, I can't get my head around it, because if you're naked, you're actually vulnerable. There's no person, no human being alive who's got their kid off who doesn't actually feel vulnerable.
But if I can share a story with you, my experience when I went for a job interview all those years ago when I had just finished university, I went for a sales account, a reps job, and I went in a pantsuit. And the comment that was made to me by the person who interviewed me was that his best sales rep has a low-cut top and a short skirt. And with that comment, I knew then and there that the job wasn't for me because I walked in with pants.
And I think the saddest thing for women, I think it'd be awfully sad to have lived your whole life relying on your looks alone. And you see that with women in their 50s, and they look like blow-up dolls. because they've had their only value of themselves is actually in the case that their soul's in. And I think that's extremely sad and something to be very wary of.
So these women, and we're specifically speaking about one section, that are exploiting their sexuality.
Correct.
So I completely agree with what you're saying, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't get my kid off for 1,000 reasons.
So the question then becomes, is that whole...
They are happy, technically, I'm assuming, that they are happy with what they're doing because that's why they're doing it.
Does that mean our gender equality will never happen?
We're not talking about the exploited women who are being drug trafficking or slave trafficking or anything like that. We're talking about people who have made a conscious decision to do what they're doing to make their living or achieve whatever it is they're going to achieve.
Or to get ahead in the workplace.
That's right. So they've made a conscious decision to live their life that way. I may not agree with it. I certainly couldn't do it. But they've made that choice. And this is the world that we live in because you can make that choice now.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I wouldn't be comfortable. I would like to be valued for many things other than my 5'2" height, which I tower above everyone. However, I make the best of whatever advantage I've got, whatever that is, in order for me to get where I need to go.
And I think we're also making some very broad assumptions about men.
Yes, we are.
Yes. Because I know that the men I meet, maybe it's just me, I live in a cave, but the men I meet, they've gone out, that 20-year-old stuff of having the hottest bird at school, and even the men that were like that, they've got a certain brainwave, you know, that's never going to be a mate of mine. You know, they're never going to be, he's never going to have wine with me because I'm not interested in that. You know, it's just shallow. And I think that most men want love and connection. And I have a friend who's a matchmaker, and she works with really wealthy men in the eastern suburbs. And she says the men all come in and they say, no Botox, no chick who's had work done. They want connection and they want someone who's real. Yeah.
Oh, we're talking about that, but it's more in the workplace where women will flaunt
themselves. So you're not watching Married at First Sight then?
Oh, I couldn't bear it.
Not on the top of the list?
No.
I do want to ask one more question because we are running out of time, surprisingly. Now, women who've left the workforce to have families, so they're out for an extended period of time, they want to come back into the workforce. And a lot of these women, we're talking about the educated women who've held senior roles before they've left to have families. When they're trying to come back into the workforce, they don't necessarily want to return to a senior position. They want something that gives them a bit more flexibility because they now want to focus on their family. One of the messages they're getting from the workforce is that they're not really employable because the jobs they're going for, they're overqualified for, and therefore they will get bored. So they're not. No one's listening that these women are actually happy for a position that will offer them a little bit less responsibility but gives them that stimulation that they need. I can see you, Kerry, knocking your head. What's going on?
Well, myself being one of these women as well, because I am a sole parent and I have a child and I took some time off to study and things like that before I went back out to the workforce. And I even retrained so that I could hit the workforce running as a primary school teacher, working solely around my child, because the issue that all my friends were having as well, the same thing. They were leaving the workforce, they were having children, and then they'd come back to these wonderful roles and getting told these wonderful stories, when then the actual fact is the employers really don't want them because they've got family responsibilities. And they ultimately think that we cannot do two things at once. They ultimately think that, you know, you're a parent first. Yes, and I agree with that. And I myself am a parent first. But that does not mean that I can't, you know, run foster caring as I do, and I can't go out and be a mum, a soccer mum, and take the kids somewhere else and do all of those type of things, as well as possibly managing a company or a business.
And this is where the huge issues are for women, in that we aren't taken seriously at the times of our lives where, let's be honest, the population of the entire world doesn't move forward unless we produce children. We've got to do it because... We're the ones that can do it, because apparently men can't.
I can't.
So, and that is the biggest problem that we have. You lack super, you take time out of the workforce, you don't have super, you're not earning money, and apparently you can't organise to have your kids picked up from school and have a job.
Yeah.
So this is the huge problem, and that is where the discrimination is sitting with these women. Families, kids, all of these things, men don't face that. And that is something that we should be unhappy about and speak up about.
It is, and we're running out of time.
Tanya Katsanis there with the Women in Business panel from the On the Money program, recorded earlier. That's it for The Wire today. You can find all our stories online at thewire.org.au, or you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or your favourite download app. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for The Wire Radio, all one word. And The Wire is a team effort by 4EB in Brisbane, Radio Adelaide and 2SER 107.3 here in Sydney. And you can hear us on your radio or online across Australia weekdays. Tune in again next week to hear more from The Wire. I'm Roderick Chambers. Thanks for your company.